Well, it's a great pleasure to be here this afternoon with you, Mr. Polanco, Morris, if I may. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we can begin by your giving us your name again for the purposes of the recording.
My name is Morris Polanco.
And could you tell us something about how you came to work in the grain trade or in association with it?
Well, I was working for the city, and everything, young fellow, I got fed up with that. I went to the Great Lakes Lumber. Great Lakes Lumber, there was a Japanese foreman down there. It was all Japanese foremen. He called me, old me, and one more fella out. There's some come over with me. Went outside, big ditch. Ditch about 6 feet deep, 3 feet of water. And he says, go dig. With what? Where's the rubbers? Where's the shovel? And he's smiling, go dig. And I swore at him, I said, you go dig. Took my lunch pill and away I went. And then this kid with me, Morris, where are you going? I says, I had it. Here's a mamucha. Got the bus and then went straight to the unemployment office. At that time was on May Street. And he see Granger repairer. Yeah, right up my alley. My super note, it's not what it's written there to be. You go inside the dust when you start down there, eating dust like hell. And, well, I was 18 at the time. So every fall time, you get laid off. Or near a late fall. I stuck it out 38 and a half years. Spent with that company.
Right. And so the company you were working for was...
CP Rail.
CP Rail. Yes. So you were actually employed by the railway.
Right.
And since you'd given me your birth date in June of 1930, this was 1948 then that you began working there, if you were 18 years old, was it? Sorry, 1941,
yeah,
1949.
Yeah, right, 1948, yes.
Was it 48?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because I'm sorry. No, it is June of 1930.
Yeah, because I was referring to these pictures when he says 65. That's when they took over the inner city.
Okay. So you were working for CP Rail, as you said, for 38 and a half years from 48 through to 86. Yeah. And you've brought some pictures with you of the crew that you were in charge of starting in... 65.
Well, that was the crew. And that's only half of the bunch there. The other half were at the elevator.
Right. So what did you work, what were you doing then when you were employed by CP Rail? Was it the same type of work all the way through?
Well, it was actually the same type, because when you start out, you're a junior guy, they send you to the elevator. You got when the elevator dumps these cars, you got these grain doors there, you got to take them off the wall, stack them, and then when the engine comes and pulls them, you know, you pull them out, you take the spikes out, and those are the good, you load them. Those are bad, you take them out, and you repair them. Yeah.
So this was the work then of handling the wooden boards that were used to block off the doors on the boxcars.
And at that time they started, he says, bring in a saw, hammer, axe, and a claw bar. So when I come there and I start asking the different departments, do you bring your own tools? They said, no, company supplies. So I went to the union, and it says, either higher pay or supply us the tools. Well, they figure it's cheaper to supply the tools. So everybody got tools.
Right. I see. What union were you with?
Camp Lodge 1446, I believe it was. Same with Missouri was ahead of
Okay, so the Brotherhood of Railway, Airline, Steamship, etc., clerks, BRAC.
Right, BRAC.
Yours was Lodge?
1446, Camp Lodge 1446.
1446, mm-hmm. Camp Lodge. And that lodge included all the CPR employees who were involved in
unloading
the car?
Well, even the freight office included.
I see. but they were employed by the railway rather than by the grain companies in the elevators, to draw the distinction. And so you had the tools supplied to you, and the boxcars would come into an elevator.
Well, yeah, the crews would push them in, they unload them. Well, some elevators had dumpers, some they had to use the shovels, you know, these shovels are just like a, well, I don't know if you know, they had holes in there for handles, and it was just a board like that, you know, on chains on.
Yeah, we've heard about those shovels. They were, I guess, the boards were sort of almost as wide as the boxcar was wide, and you climb in there, or were they smaller than that?
You mean, you're talking about the shovels?
Those wooden shovels.
Well, the shovels, though, they were about, maybe about 3 feet wide.
Oh, I see, they were.
Yeah.
And so you'd climb in with one and shove it down into the grain.
Right.
And then the chain on it would pull it, and your job was to sort of keep it
not
upright.
Me, the guys at the elevator.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah, the elevator employees, they did that. That was their job.
Your concern is the
when they come out of it,
is opening the door so that they can do this, and then handling the wood.
After it comes out of the elevator, out of the car shed, then we go into the car and strip those grainers off the walls, you know, and put them in two piles.
Right. So it's a very, one particular specialty that we really hadn't thought about, that the CPR, and I guess the other railway
CSCR,
companies.
Same thing, but they had wider doors.
Oh, yeah.
Theirs were about 22 inches wide. And ours was only 16.
And so you had to have a specialized crew just to handle that.
Right.
People
right,
So you'd be taking these wooden boards. Had the fellows in the elevator unloading actually got the board, they'd open the car
they
up?
They open it, and after they throw back in the car any old way, and out it comes.
And that's when you took
over. Yeah.
And so you were involved in ensuring that when the boxcar with these door partitions went back,
they had to be cleaned.
They had to be cleaned. They had to be in shape so they could be used again. Were they nailed against the boxcar, or did they just set them in as the grain?
No. They were nailed.
They were nailed. All the way up to the top, or
they used 4-inch nails. No, one side to the top, and the next side, the other side was not, because they had to put spokes in there to put the grain in it.
Yeah, and you had to be able to get into to open them up, I suppose.
Right.
So that was the business then of.
A dirty job, dirty, heavy, but everybody was happy.
Yeah. How heavy were these boards?
Well, it all depends. When I started, we had duplex. And we had hopper bottoms, they called it. But they went out because they were 40-ton cars, you know, the small cars. They went steel cars 60-ton, so those were out of the way. And those are the ones that we got later on.
The picture shows the steel cars, is it?
Steel car, yeah.
Because you were working with the old wooden boxcars earlier.
Well, after we cleaned them out, we called it the dump. And then we had loaded into the cars. At first, we started 1,000 doors into a car. And it was too much down there for the elevator, so 250 on a flat. These other ones were 1,000 or 750 was vertical.
So you'd load 250 of these boards into one car.
Grain doors.
The grain doors.
Yeah.
It wasn't that each boxcar went back with its own allotment, but...
No.
I see. No, so that when the cars were being loaded, they had to be sure they had a stock of these boards at at each of the country points, I suppose, was it?
The country points, they had to phone in, and if they wanted a car, well, it was there on the siding. They take the car in there. But when they were loading 1,000 doors, it was too much for this little elevator, you know, it was too much for the...
Yes.
One had too much and the other one had nothing.
Right. So it was better distribution.
Yeah.
Yes, how many boards would one boxcar require? How wide were they?
Well, they were 16 inches wide.
And it was what, 2 by... 2 by... 2-inch lumber?
You mean the thickness?
Yes, the thickness.
Oh, about 3/4 inch.
Okay, so they weren't planks, they were boards.
But they were double.
You were saying, you said duplex earlier, so that was the duplex.
Well, duplex was the older ones.
Yeah.
These 40-ton cars.
Two of these cars, or two of these boards rather, nailed together would make up one of them. So it's an inch and a half. Well, it's actually pretty close to 2x16 then, but they, of course, a 2x16 plank would be hard to find, so doing it with boards would make sense. And your job, did the fellows unloading the cars damage these boards frequently?
Well, the ones that had to shovel them, they had axes, just like fireman axes. The bottom ones, you cut them in half. You can't help it, you got to get the grain out, right?
Sure.
So I mean, when we put the good ones on top, and the ones we smashed on top of them, and then when they come, we took them out of the cars, then we burnt them. Lots of firewood.
And you actually just disposed of it there with your own fires.
Right.
You could have sold the firewood, I suppose.
But I don't think you could have got away with it these days.
No, I would think not. And so that was the... you worked at this business particularly as long as boxcars were used. Did it change, or were they always using boards in this way?
No, they come with one car that had an 8-foot wide, so they had to make 9-foot door.
Yes.
Still 16 inches wide.
Yeah.
But when you loaded them, they were top heavy, because you got them on your back, and you went up a ramp.
I see, when you were putting the boards into
we look at just like the jackass with those grinders on our backs.
Yeah. You said earlier that the doors on the various grain cars were, box cars were various widths. Now you're saying 8 foot, and I think that's the size I'm most familiar with myself.
No, that was later on.
Yes, but the earlier...
We didn't get very many of those cars.
No, the earlier ones were...
Well, the earlier ones were 6 foot wide.
Okay, even narrower. Yeah.
And the first one, when they started, well, they call them duplex. They were 4x5.
Quite narrow doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I remember one boxcar very well. It was loaded with plywood out of BC. This was in the early 60s in Winnipeg for a lumber company. And plywood comes in 3-inch thick paper wrap packages, slides very easily and so on. I remember unloading that boxcar on a hot, sweaty day, and I think it was a steel boxcar with
8-foot
doors.
There?
And every package of plywood had to be slid off and down onto a truck. And
so some were missing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's my memory of one particular boxcar. So there they were, then up to 8 feet wide with these later ones. And the work didn't change particularly as long as the boxcars were in use.
No.
And crews that was required, was this work done at every one of the elevators then?
Everyone. Now later on, before they come up these hopper cars, they had paper grinders. It was made from cardboard with steel straps and nailed into the corners of the boxcars. Well, they were hard to pull, really hard to pull.
Yes, and I would, and with the boxcars being transported from the prairies, it's just this craft paper, I suppose, or cardboard. Yeah. That's all that was in the door, or was there a steel door that?
No. That was the inside door that was holding the grain in.
Yes. But then there was also...
Yeah, well, the outside door, they call
it. The outside door that closed it. Yeah. And how many would be working at each of the elevators? Would it depend on the size of the elevator, the number of cars being unloaded?
Well, I don't know. Our gang used to vary, because inner city at one time only had these school students. On the three shifts, we had 100 men.
On three shifts?
On one place, inner city, just the one place, 100 men.
Among the intercity group of elevators?
Yeah, on three shifts.
Okay. And did the cars come together at one particular location from the various elevators then for intercity? Or?
Well, yes. When the engine went to pull, he went with, pull McCabe, then pull one, and if he didn't have enough cars, he'd go double up into P&H,
Yes. And so...
And he'd pull them out, and we dumped those granulars out, and away we went.
Right. Yeah. And this was all being done in that sort of overgrown, somewhere in that overgrown area inland from the terminal elevators.
Yeah, they got right now that they built that fire, where the firemen trained over there in inner city.
Okay, so that's where it
was. Everything's knocked down. There's no more. We had these repair shacks, they're turned on, lunch shacks. There's nothing there, nothing.
No. These repair shacks were the buildings in which you worked.
Well, repaired the doors, yes.
Yes, yeah. And so you said three shifts in the summertime when things were busy, working around the clock then.
Oh, yeah.
8-hour shifts. And you worked at this for 48 to 65, and then you became a foreman, and you were a foreman for the next 23 years or so,
from 65 till 86.
Or 21 years, right. Yeah. Do you enjoy being a foreman?
I'll tell you this much. I didn't push them in like the bosses used to push me. If he's doing his job, leave him alone.
Yeah. Whereas your foreman did a good deal of pushing.
Eh? Oh, did he ever? He's in the picture there.
Okay, well, you want to mention this gentleman's name, or is it?
A Polak. Yashowski. The guy on the left.
Had a smile on him, but he was
Bill Yashowski. Well, we just finished loading a car of Rangers. That's why he's smiling.
Oh, yes. So this is the picture in which three of you are standing there with four of the boards behind you.
I'm in the center.
You're the one in the center. Mm. Well, it's a pleasure to have the car loaded. This is loaded with the boards now for sending back west.
In this picture here, there's nine of them that's not with us anymore.
Yeah, I can imagine. And did he like pushing you?
Pardon?
Did this Polak like pushing you?
Oh, he had a son working for in that gang, and he pushed his son. Oh, I felt sorry for the guy. I felt sorry for the guy.
So he liked to ride his workers, sort of, eh?
And then the poor fellow died, and he says, Morris, what? Nobody got at the funeral. Well, could you blame the guys? I said, look what he did to them.
Yeah. Kind of sad. Really sad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. This other picture is of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, is it 12? 12 men by the look of it. Uh-huh. And they're standing in front of a Canadian Pacific Railway steel boxcar. And I guess those are boards stacked up that they're leaning against.
Grain doors, yeah.
Yeah, the grain doors that are right. May be ready, may not, but getting ready to ship them west. When the hopper cars began to be used, box cars were still in use through that.
Yes, well, it was grain doors. There was then they changed it to paper doors, and grain doors went on the way out. And then when the hopper cars come, well, that was it.
Yes. How long were the grain trains mixed? They continued having boxcars for a while, I suppose, or did it change over completely to hopper cars?
No, it was a gradual change. It wasn't a gradual change.
So
less and less guys, and then they come to us. And they says, well, there's going to be only a few guys left. You'll have to work like when you started in 48. They say, hey, I was 18, and you want me to do the same thing as my 18 years old? I said, no way. I said, I'm out. Give me my pension.
Yeah. This was in 86.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they said to work in the same way, but you were, the same work wasn't needed.
No, how could you?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's a way to encourage you to retire, I guess, but full pension?
They beat me another $300 a month on pension.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a CPR, right?
I had 2 years, I don't know if you know Ian Robb. I went to him for 2 years. He was in that office there. He says, shook his head. I says, forget about it.
I'll survive. Yeah. I won't make as many trips as I'd like to, but... So I guess in your work there probably was a kind of a typical day. Were the days pretty well all the same?
Well, the days were all the same, but for hard work, it was really bulwark. And the guys were happy. Joked with each other, laughed.
Yeah. You
know? Although we had those tough bosses, but they weren't with us all the time.
No. When you became foreman, what kinds of new responsibilities did you have? How did it change your own work?
Well, I was a timekeeper.
For the crew?
Pardon?
For the crew.
Yeah, all three shifts. I had to go to the elevators to see how the men were getting along, if they needed help or not. One time I took a bike, and with a bike, half an hour, I checked everything.
Yeah.
Official come from west, see me on a bike, and he stopped with his car. He says, you're doing nothing but playing with the bike. You're having a good time. I said, yeah. I said, okay, starting tomorrow, I'm going on foot. On foot is going to take me an hour and a half to do the same job I did with the bike for half an hour. Yeah. And he had another official in the car with him. So the following day, he's there waiting for me. So I walked by and waved to him. I'm on foot, no bike. Oh, he was mad, but what could he do?
Yeah, so you got the bike back, or did they have you on
foot? No, I went on foot after that. I went on foot,
I mean, walking is fun too, if you're in good health.
Well, also, it's a good exercise, yeah. Because I had to take care of the 8 elevators down there. I had to see if the guys are okay.
Yes. Were you responsible only for the intercity group then, or?
Well, yeah, at that time I was.
Yeah.
And later on, it was a layoff. There's only I was there, and there's Joe Harlick. There's two of us, and he gave us a truck.
Sure.
3/4-ton truck. And we had to take care of from grain growers all the way to the mission.
Right. So all the way from over Kern River, the whole waterfront was yours.
Right.
When you say you were responsible for the 3 shifts, the time on them, did that mean you had to be there at the...
No. I was just making their time.
Making up
their
time cards.
Each shift had a keyman. Instead of foreman, he used to call him keyman. You know?
Yes.
And he was responsible for the men, and the men, the keyman, told me what was going on.
Sure.
Good. Who's on the job, who's not on the job, and all that.
Yes. Yeah. And were there other things you had to do as foreman, or was it, well, you mentioned the time, making sure that everything is organized, supervising, the guys knew their jobs, you didn't have to push them.
If they knew your job, they did the job, I didn't touch them.
No.
I did not touch them. And some guys there, well, needed a little shoving, you know, with... I didn't push him that they over-exert themselves.
I suppose the people, the guys, it was all men.
All men, yes.
Yeah, the crews that had been hired, the men knew their work. And have you ever have to fire anyone? Or?
No, I couldn't fire.
You could recommend for fire.
I could have sent him to the station, and you get fired from there.
Yes.
But I wouldn't even do that.
No. The station. This is the one...
The CPR station.
Yeah, you know, South...
Syndicate. Yeah.
South Syndicate, right. Mm-hmm. Where it is there. That's where the management for CPR was.
Oh, that place was loaded. People were falling over each other. I was even there in the office. I didn't like the office. I says, I'm going back out in open spaces.
Yes. So maybe they had some redundancy, as they say, their employees.
Well, the guy next to me was laughing. He wants to go. So he doesn't want to work, but he wants to go in the office. I said, go ahead.
Sure, sit around and drink coffee.
Yeah.
Did you have an office yourself?
Have any what?
Did you have an office, a space from which you did your
job? No, one check. We had a desk there, a telephone by the desk, and that was about it.
Sure. And your job was with the men, really,
right.
And making sure everything
went well.
The
guys come to eat, and you're doing your job, and they're around you eating.
Yeah. Why were you made the foreman? Have any ideas about that?
Well, when the guy retired, I bid on the job.
You bid on the job. Mm-hmm. Others as well?
Because it's more pay, too. You know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there others as well, or did you beat out for the job?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the company thought that you'd be a good foreman.
Well, they figured I couldn't handle it, but I did.
Yes. As you did for the...
I showed them.
Yeah, for the 21 years. So basically, you came into a job that, into work that had been done for decades, I guess, from the time boxcars first existed. And you did this work for 38 years until it was over, until it wasn't needed any longer.
Well, so as those hopper cars come in there, goodbye, Charlie.
Yeah, yes. Well, a typical day is foreman. What would you like people to know about the work that you did over the years? Was your work more in the intercity area than in the other? You say you became responsible for the whole
Red. Well, I worked in a city, and then I got bumped. So I had to bump another guy in Kern River. So I went back there. That's where I started, in Kern River.
You'd actually started in Kern River, even though you lived and grew up in West Fork. You were supervising.
Yeah, well, Alexander Street then.
Yes.
But really, job is a job.
Yes, of course.
I like Kern Rivers.
All right. We hadn't talked about the seasons of the year. You'd begin work when the grain began moving in the
spring. Well, when break up of the ice, you know, and then you start hiring. Elevators would get more busy, so we get more men. And during the summer, it'd go, and then late fall, close to winter, you start, you know, things would slow down.
Well, would it increase in through September and October when the crop was being taken out of the prairies?
Yeah,
was really busy.
Oh, yeah.
And then it'd be beginning to slow down in November, December?
Well, it'd slow down after the shipping season closed.
Yeah, well, that's... When did it close in those days?
Well, sometimes before Christmas.
Yeah. And other times it ran into January?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Because remember, the Christmas trees on board the ships.
And then you would be laid off for 3 months?
Well, I don't know, about 10 years or so, I was laid off all the time. But you get back, the guys go on pension ahead of you. So you go a few steps up.
And then you had a year-round employment?
And then a year-round, yes.
What did you do as foreman then during the winter? Was it kind of marking time, or was there work for you to do?
Well, if there wasn't not much in the elevator, they send you on a mission to check the cars, to see if they're leaking, doors open, and snow. Oh boy, high. A lot of deer there. And I figured, I'm not going to walk through that snow. So what I did, I walked on top of the boxcars. And they check from the top. Not much snow up there.
No. Mm-hmm. Ought to be young and able-bodied, eh?
Not now.
No.
Barely could grow.
Yeah, so that would keep you busy. Who was your own superior? You were a foreman, but...
Well, I'm going to tell you was my superior, and there should not be one. Because he didn't have nothing up there. The guy that I told you to, Andy Antonation, he's the one that carried the load. The head guy was Frank Yarkowski. Did you know him?
No.
He was a switchman, and nobody liked him. The only way he got that job, his sister was working in the superintendent's office. That's how he got the job.
So she put a word in with the superintendent?
Oh, I'm not telling you. He come up with stupid ideas, you know, and I says, Frank, where are you getting all these ideas from? Was he staying up weeknights? You know? I said, man, oh man. He told us to put pile up cardboard up against the elevators. These work sheds. And then what? I said, well, we're going to get it in the morning. Have you got 25 trucks? Well, why do I need 25 trucks? There's 25 elevators. They're not going to wait for you, you know, to take that cardboard out. I says, when you start 8 o'clock and the cars are coming out, you're on the way. You know? And I said, besides, did you get permission from the superintendent from the elevator? Why? Well, the guys can't smoke inside. They come outside to smoke and they're going to toss a cigarette in there. Who's going to be responsible? You or me? Shut his mouth.
Yeah.
That's just a few things. A lot of things.
Well, the difficulty was, of course, that as a switchman, he hadn't worked on your job. He really didn't understand what was involved.
No. He shouldn't have never been a foreman.
No. You mentioned Mr. Antonishin, who is still...
Andy Antonishin?
Yes, you mentioned him.
He was number one.
And number one in this case, you want to say a little bit more about that? He was the lead foreman, or...
He was assistant to Yarkovsky.
Okay.
But he carried Yarkovsky.
Yeah. He should have had Yarkovsky.
He should have had it. Yeah. He carried him.
Right.
He did all the paperwork, and the timesheets went in. He did the time. He did everything.
Right. Yes.
He was on the ball, that guy.
Yeah. I've approached him, and he's just not able to. He's still with us, but he's not able to do it
anymore.
He's
in the 90s.
He's well on in his 90s.
So he's the number one guy.
Yeah, it's a shame that he's. We didn't catch him earlier because he'd be able to.
Oh,
he'd tell
you stories. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember some of the stories he'd tell?
He told a lot of stories, but you think I could remember them? No, I don't think so. He used to take care of the stockyards.
The stockyards?
Well, we had stockyards over here.
Livestock?
Oh, yeah, livestock come, they unload it here, they feed them, and then after they put them back inside the stockyards and ship them either east, no, they're going east, from west to east.
So this was livestock being shipped for feeding or to market or whatever?
To market.
Right. Yeah. And so it was his responsibility.
Well, that's before he went to the office. Yeah. That's the way he was.
I see. So he'd come through that part of the office. Where were they? Out towards Roslyn?
You know what Athabasca Street is?
I've seen the name.
In East End?
Yeah.
Yes, in the...
Right across the tracks, just on the other side.
Okay.
The stockyards ran from Pacific Avenue to William Street at that time. They were that big. You know?
I see. So this would be a place where the cattle were being fed, watered, and so on and so forth.
They had horses there, too.
To be able to handle the trip.
Mostly cattle.
Right. Yeah. And so he'd come through that part of it. I suppose the connection of these animals to the grain trade was that they were eating some of the feed, enjoying feed before moving on. Yeah. Do any other thoughts come to mind about story? Now, he would tell stories from the stockyards then, I guess, would he?
But, well, he'd tell all kinds of stories, but it's hard to remember. You know?
Yes, but he told good stories.
There's some really bad stories, but you know, what's on?
Yeah. What might... surprise people about the work that you did?
Well, what surprised people is, this is where you work, railroad, what department? Grain doors. What's a grain door? What department is that? People didn't know.
No.
They didn't know what the hell we did.
Well, it makes perfect sense as soon as you describe it. It was necessary to handle all of this.
Well, we had to, because if they didn't get the doors, we wouldn't load those cars.
Right. But people tend not to think very deeply about a business.
No, a lot of people didn't know.
No. But the CPR, or the other railway companies, moving grain,
If you were
they
a railroader,
needed your skills.
Yeah, if you were a railroader or worked for the elevators, you'd know.
Yes.
Otherwise, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Right. I'm interested as a farmer's son from Manitoba who has helped to, I don't know whether I ever myself hauled grain to the elevator, probably not. My father used a trailer that he put on a car chassis at an early point to haul grain into the elevator. And I've been there with him, and later he had a truck as well. And so, I think of the boxcars, we didn't pay any attention, or even mean they were out there. The grain was being moved, loaded into them and so on, but obviously the boards would be needed there to block off the doors as the as the boxcar was being filled.
On one side, you could put 7 or 8. On the other side, where the spot went in, it maybe put about 5 or 6.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And would it always be the? I mean, you just have to. a boxcar is sort of unisex, or is it? Or is there? No, I guess not. Actually, they have different matings at the two ends. So a boxcar, or does it? This is another detail of structure. Yeah.
Coupling.
Yeah, the coupling, is it?
They're all the same.
They're the same at both ends.
Yeah.
So they are sort of. So there wouldn't, depending on how the boxcar was positioned, of course, when it came to the elevator, the terminal elevator, the boxcar would have to be positioned right. You'd unload always on the same side?
Yeah, well, the side that they loaded on, that's the side they put less of the grinders on.
Yeah, so you
on
get
opposite
into
side,
it.
You can put it right up to the ceiling. You know?
Right. Yeah.
And as far as the coupler goes, all the same.
Yes.
All the same.
I'm just wondering whether, when the trains arrived at the yards here in the city, would the cars all be positioned so that they'd go into the elevators right, or did there have to be turning around?
No, no, they didn't have to turn around. No.
They
had the cars which elevator they're supposed to go to. And they pushed them in.
But somewhere or other, that care would have to be taken to make them up so that they would arrive at the elevators right. So I'm thinking that not every country point elevator is going to be positioned the same way.
No, but over here, they all went in.
Yeah, so somewhere or other, maybe at the humping yard in Winnipeg, CNR's facility, I guess, they'd have to be rearranged. Another, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty of a train or the nuts and bolts of it, the doors on the boxcars, the boards and so on, and other jobs, there would be a variety of specialty trades involved in. A lot of those would be grain, or rather the railway company employees that would do those sorts of things, though, I guess, to make it. So the surprise is that there was a crew of guys who did this. What would the largest number of men working on these grain doors have been?
Well, you mean from coast to coast?
Well, CPRs here in the city.
Well, I mean coast to coast, from Westport down to Green River.
Okay.
Well, it varies, it's not the same. Fall time would be the most men, just like I told you before, that inner city alone. One time we had 100 men, all 3 shifts. Yeah. But the same thing in Kern River.
I see.
So maybe 300 men altogether.
300 men.
Yeah. And a busy time.
Yes. And some of that would be short-term employment.
Yeah. And then one winter, I told you, with the truck.
Yes.
It was only 2 of us.
Right, yes. Did you, would the 300 of you at that peak point of employment, would you know each other? Would you get together at all during the year? You were all members of one lodge of the
RAC. Union meetings, yes, and boys get transferred here and there,
Yeah.
We got to know each other.
Was there any social life amongst you as members of this particular lodge? Bending the elbow. Particular hotels that you've patronized?
Legions, mostly the Legions.
The Legion Halls, 6 and 5. Yeah. So that's what helped to keep the Legions going as long as they
clean out the dust.
Well, yes. Now, you had less concern about dust than was true in the elevators. Or was there a serious dust problem?
Well, the guys in the elevator that used to shovel those cars, they had these masks on, you know. We didn't have any masks, nothing. We didn't have no hard hats. Later on, they told us to wear hard hats.
What about steel-toed boots?
Oh, we had to have that, yeah.
From the beginning, eh?
We had to have
gloves?
Yeah, everybody had to have gloves.
Did they provide them, or?
Oh, no.
No.
We fired them.
How long did they last, a pair of gloves?
Well, they didn't last very long, like, for me, because in the winter, you'd have this one that's, you call them gloves, and the other one with fingers during the summer. What would you call them? You wouldn't call them gloves, too, would you? Mitts and gloves.
Yeah, well, mitts in the wintertime. Yes, of course, because of the cold.
See, mine's not working.
Well, it is working. The my experience of hand wear, if you will, around wood is that wood really does wear on them.
The wood we used to handle used to be rough.
Yes.
It wasn't the plain stuff, so it wore old faster.
Yeah, all the faster. Yeah. As one of working in the lumber yard, I was surprised at how hard on gloves wood could be.
Great Lakes Lumber, I worked there too.
Sure. What are you most proud of in the work that you did over these years?
What am I most proud of? That's a good question. That I got along with the men.
Yeah, you were foreman for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's quite a period of time.
I didn't make no man mad at me.
Yeah. Are a lot of the guys who were in your crews are still alive?
Oh, yes.
Well, you were saying 9 of them were gone?
There's the one that I visited at the Grandview is 88 years old.
Yeah.
Andy there is 90 years old.
Yeah.
There's one guy that worked with me, John Colville. He's in the Mission, B.C. And he's in bad shape, too.
Yeah.
There's quite a few of us around yet.
Sure. And what counts is quite aside from the number of people coming to your funeral someday.
Yeah. I don't want nobody to come to my funeral.
The fact is that you visit them. You're still on good terms with the guy.
I'm not even going to be in the paper.
There's no one there to put it in?
Oh, no, I got a brother that's 23 years younger than I am. And I told him, I said, make sure, I says, I don't appear in the obituary.
Why?
Well, did people know when I was born? Huh? Nobody was around. Same thing now.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that there's no one, there aren't many people that it would matter to any longer.
Cremated, right? Like my wife says, and mixed up the ashes, and asked the funeral parlor if they could do that, and he says, yes, we could mix up the ashes. I said, that's what I want.
Yeah. And then put them somewhere.
Yeah. Put them any place they want. Yeah. I couldn't care less.
You're not very sentimental. Yeah.
Those days are gone.
Did you know Frank Mazur well?
No, I didn't know. We used to go, we had these meetings up in that hall, what do they call it? Labor Hall on Fort William Road.
Right, yeah, the Labor Center.
And he was there all the time.
Yes. Because Frank didn't have a funeral either.
Pardon?
Frank didn't have a funeral, didn't want a funeral service.
He didn't?
No.
Good for him.
That's why I mentioned Frank. Yeah. I think the lodge did have a kind of a memorial for him at the Labor Center. Because I think the guys deserve to have the chance to think about Frank. Maybe your crews do too, but anyway, that's not the business we're here for. We're looking back, not ahead. Obviously, your work contributed to Canada's success as an international grain trader.
I hope so.
You had to provide the board so they could get the grain here and send it on.
Not only me, because if it wasn't for them, you know, it wouldn't be impossible. Yeah. It's the crew that I had.
Yes, yeah. And you were proud of the guys. did a good job. What major changes did you see in your job and trade over the years? You've mentioned the different sizes of doors, the going from wood to the
major
cardboard
changes.
And so on, but and then of course the hopper cars coming in, that's an obvious change. Are there, you might want to say more about those, or are there other changes that you saw? Did the railway change over the years from your experience, the railway company?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there's much of a change according to our department. We did the same thing day in and day out.
Yes.
The only change, was a big change, was hopper cars come in.
Yes.
That's the only big change.
Yeah. But for the rest, the seasons came and the seasons went. You bicycled, you walked, you got a truck to get around. The range of your responsibility could vary, but it was basically the same thing, whether it was just inner city or whether it was the whole coast to coast.
It started at one place, and then, when the gang got smaller, they give you a vehicle, and what you went.
Yes. And then at the end, they pushed you out.
Well, I pushed myself out.
Yeah, well, you made the decision, but they helped you. other challenges would you say that you faced on the job over the years?
Well, there's a lot of challenges, if you call it challenges, is that my boss, those Frank Yarkowski, and guys like that was pushing them in for no reason at all.
Yes.
I didn't like that at all.
Was it really just harassing the guys for the sake of harassing them?
That's it. I got so mad that I ran for reaver of the department. And when I got that job, I don't know what the hell that boss did, that I brought him to the superintendent. And that time was Trimble. I don't know if you remember Trimble.
No.
And had this Ernie Johnson, he was our local chairman. I'm supposed to keep my mouth shut and he's supposed to do the talking. But he didn't know what the hell it was all about, so I did the talking, he kept his mouth shut.
Sure.
And we went to the superintendent and he asked what the problem is. I says to the superintendent, I says, listen, I says, if he went, that's Frank Acosta, going according to this rule book, I said, be no problem. Whoa. And Frank was in the hallway. He called him, shouted, told me to go out, and boy, did he get hell.
For the superintendent?
Superintendent gave this Frank Yarkowski hell.
Yeah.
I said, you go according to that bloody book.
Yeah.
No fooling around.
The rule book, had it been negotiated, or was it the
company? No. It was a company and union.
Yeah, had negotiated the rule book, yes. Yeah. And you were serving as sort of steward for the,
union.
Yes. You were saying that. I didn't quite catch the title, did you say steward, that you were the steward?
Well, yeah.
Or did they have another title? So what did you say you ran for?
Company steward, yeah.
Yeah, it was the company, the steward, or the union steward.
Yeah. And the other guy was the local chairman.
Sure, yes, right. And did your local ever go on strike through those years?
Oh, yes, we were on strike a few times.
Because I know the grain handlers, Lodge 650 was on strike.
No, we were on strike too, yes.
Separate from Lodge 650 or as part of the same strike?
Part of the same strike.
Part of the same strike, yeah. Did you have a combined negotiating team then? Were you part of the same negotiation, or were you just sort of dragged along by Lodge 650?
No, I was on the picket line. I'm going to tell you a story about, and this is true, this fellow here that Antonishin told us this. When there was a strike, they had a train in a station. It was all kind of, there was a liquor in there, and it was... all kind of food stuff, anything you wanted, sugar.
A mixed train.
So the superintendent come out, he says, And the office staff didn't go on strike, you know, the big bosses. So he says, "Boys, break the seals, go into the car, and take whatever you want. Because they're on strike, we're going to blame it on the strikers. And it's going to be covered by the
insurance
companies." Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah, there's not much that's unfair in a strike, I guess, with the companies. So they were particularly interested in the liquor, I suppose, were they?
Yeah, the guys were taking everything.
Yeah. So I guess some of the stuff could have spoiled during the strike.
Said, "Andy, what did you take?" "Nothing."
Yeah. This is Mr. Agitation. An honest man.
He was good.
Yeah. Any other, did you have any kind of understanding, impression of challenges that the grain trade was facing during those years? There were ups and downs, I suppose, to some extent. So did you, some years they needed more men than other years?
Well, yeah, well, not that you mentioned that it was, because when it got busy, he asked for men, you know, and he wouldn't give you any. Instead, he come to me, this Frank I was talking about, he said, "Send one guy to Kern River." I says, "I'm short, I need men. Send one guy to Kern River." I says, "No, I'm not sending nobody to Kern River." I said, "You tell that guy that's handling that job, instead of sweeping grain, which he was, to do the same work as I do, and he won't need a man." "Huh? How do you know he's sweeping?" I said, "I know he's sweeping grain." And I didn't send him a man. Mm-hmm. I didn't send him any.
Yeah. This was...
And if you want to take me to the office, to the superintendent, I said, "Go ahead." And he was afraid. He was afraid.
You would have specified the problem.
Yeah.
Now, was this a matter of more work to be done, or...?
Well, yeah, but it was more work, so we needed an extra man, you know.
Yeah, but they didn't want to hire an extra man.
They didn't want to hire any, practically, send one guy to Kern River. No way.
No.
No way.
Did you enjoy being a foreman?
Yes, I did.
Did that take you out of the union?
No.
Okay, so you were...
No.
Sometimes the... I guess they talk about lead hands as another term for the work, for the foreman who remains in the union. I don't suppose you would have left the union.
No, no. I was there to the last.
Yes. Yeah. How important was the union to you over the years? And there's a
Well, when I started, first I told you that before, it was really hard. The old timers was pushing the guys. We had to buy our own tools. You know, so everything fell in its place. I was responsible for some of it, not all of it. And after a while, the things got not bad. You know?
Working conditions improved.
Oh, did they ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that as a result of negotiations?
If I was a yes man, they wouldn't. But I stood my ground, especially with my... with that foreman of mine, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give an inch to him.
Sure. Of course, you were both in the union, so that it was kind
Well,
of...
he wasn't in the union.
Oh, he wasn't?
No, not
him. No, he was supervisory.
I was in the union.
Yeah. And were there circumstances in which the union protected your employment? Were you ever in danger of being fired?
Well, I think I should have been fired a long time ago. These officials, but they were afraid to do anything to me. One time, safety guy come with a white helmet, there was another guy with him. They told us, "If you see a stranger, don't talk to him, because there's a contractor who wants to take over." Okay, no problem. So, I know this guy's got a white hat, he's safety, the other guy, I don't know what he is. So, that time I was buying 50-50 tickets from the switchman, Johnny Bardock. And this guy comes to me, hears him, "If you're going to be another job, you won't have the chance to buy tickets." I says, "I have more chance to buy tickets." They went. don't know what that was. Phone rings, it's Andy. Morris, you got to apologize. To who? To assistant superintendent. Well, who's he? And he was assistant superintendent. I didn't know. Usually when somebody comes down there, they
introduces
themselves. Yeah, who they are. He didn't say a word. Now, how the hell am I to... First they say, don't talk to strangers, and then I got to apologize.
Yeah.
Man, oh man, what's going on here? Yeah?
No, that's stupid.
Well, I went through a lot, but I handled it.
Yes. White hats are always the bosses, eh?
Yeah. One time he sent me to the elevator, this Frankie says, wear your white helmet. I says, no, I'm going to wear a yellow one. Why? I said, well, the big shots won't know who the hell I am, you know? No, you wear the white one. Okay. That time it was the first load of these cars with paper doors. So they dumped this pool one. They dumped this car. Everybody went, the car's still on the dumper. Everybody went in the car, including our superintendent. He says to me, pull that nail out of that corner there. I'm trying to pull with a hammer, a handle's bending. I said, no, can't. Oh, you don't know how. Yeah. I don't know how? 25 years, I'm with a hammer, I don't know how. Okay, here, show me how. He takes the hammer. Same thing with him. We need a special tool. To this day, we haven't got that special tool. To this day. Yeah. Yeah, that's the guys we had were working officials. What you had to put through.
Put up with.
Yeah.
The hard hat that you wore on the job was yellow?
White.
Oh, it was white.
I didn't want one. Yeah. I didn't want a white one. I wanted a yellow one, just like all the rest of the guys.
Yeah. The crew.
The officials come, the first thing they come up to the guy with a white hat. You know?
Yes, they want to know who's in charge.
So sometimes Andy would phone me from the station. He says, Morris, there's officials going to come to see you down there. I said, oh, thank you. So I went into the yard, sat on the rail, put the mitts on the rail, sat on the thing. I'm smoking. And where's the foreman? Oh, he went in the yard, he's checking cars. And I'm looking, you can't see me, but I could see them. And I'm smoking. I'm looking at them. As soon as they go, I come out. I didn't want to talk to them.
Oh, I see.
I didn't want to talk to them.
And you got away with it.
Yeah, they ask you stupid questions of them.
You were able to smoke on the job.
Oh, yes.
Was there a lot of drinking on the job?
No. One thing, the one guy one time come with a bottle of beer in his lunch bill. And I says, I don't mind you drinking, but this is against the rules, you know. We cannot drink on the job. I said, okay.
He didn't know better.
Yeah.
So he took his...
Well, he didn't know.
The bottle or the can went home.
He come from Italy.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where alcohol are they?
Maybe they do that in Italy, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Well, what are your most vivid memories of the job? You've given us...
Vivid.
Yeah, some good memories up to this point.
I had a good relationship with the men. That's my memories.
Yeah.
I had a good gang.
Yeah.
Treated them good.
Yes.
And that works both ways.
Right. Well, they respected you, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
My chief engineer here has gradually... made me aware that he's got good questions to ask sometimes too. So I'm going to turn to Owen and say,
Well, he's been listening.
He has indeed.
Yeah. I don't know if he's got any questions. Have you?
I have a question.
Yeah.
But I think you were kind of like those armies, some of those armies where the officers always wear no ranks because they don't get shot first day. So they don't know you're a major. They think you might just be.
No.
So it was good. It was a good ploy on your part. But who are some of the guys you worked with that you'd have a chance to maybe mention their names now, and people remember them through this interview? The good guys you worked with. You mentioned your group that you worked with, your gang.
Well, I could mention right off the picture here.
Okay,
it's easy. Okay, there's Rovanez, Pelewski, Sinkovich, Antosiak, Kolaitis, Galatsky, Chihawi, Polus, Lewicki, Kolesnek, and I can't see the other guy. He's Italian. I know he's Italian. Yeah. What else?
What guys stood out in your mind were guys you'd like to work with and enjoyed working with that you may not have mentioned?
Well, that's a good question. Because I had a good relationship with everybody, you know.
What was a good relationship? You kept on saying you had a good relationship with your workers. You could trust one another? Or?
We could trust one another, and whatever, if I give an order, it was obeyed. Not like some of these young guys that said, we use that four-letter word. I says, what? I says, listen, say that once more. I says, don't ever say that again, because I says, I could send you to the station, and he's gone. You know? I says, I'm not going to do that. I says, I'm giving you an order. You're not going to kill yourself. If you need help, come to me, and I'll give you help.
But avoid the profanity.
Right. Yeah.
No drinking.
No.
No swearing.
Respect.
No, you could swear all you want as long as there's no women around.
But there were certain languages you didn't want to hear.
The officials did more swearing than I did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I suppose.
I had these in the lunch shack up in Kern River, a lot of these pinups.
Oh, yeah.
And the superintendent come in and looked at it. Take those effing pictures down. What kind of pictures? Oh, he said it again. I didn't take them down, they're still. Shack got burned down and put those pictures in them.
All the
the
good-looking girls went up in the smoke too, or up in the flames.
I'm sorry for the girls.
But they survived the superintendent. Yeah. Anything else, Owen?
That's all. I just want to get the names of some of the guys, because they probably, their kids still live in town here, their families, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, well, there's one guy, Joe Hardick. I don't know if you're from Westport. You're from Westport?
Yeah.
Do you know him?
No, I don't know him.
From Brock Street.
No, I'm just down from Brock Street.
He's, he should be around 88, 89, something like that. His wife died a few years back.
You took one of the pictures and you were reading from left to right on the picture. And I'm saying this because you know, the recording doesn't have the picture, but if we do a copy of it, we'll have it. So we can then, we should probably mark on the photocopy which picture you were reading, remembering the names on.
This one on top here.
Yeah, well, that's the
Michael Ramirez. It sounds just like, that's why I first thought when I started there. Ramirez, Cuba? Yuk.
Yeah.
Huh?
But names got changed sometimes. So.
Well, yeah. I never heard of a Romanes Yuk.
I was going to ask you as a follow-up question to that. The names suggest a pretty fair variety of backgrounds, or were the crews mostly Ukrainian and Italian?
No, there were Greeks, there were Polish, Ukrainians, Italians. You name it.
Yeah. So this is where the Canadian stew pot, Americans say melting pot, I think Canada's stew pot's a better term for it. The Canadian stew pot was well represented there.
We got along together.
And you got along together. Okay. And you were. When you began in 1948, the foreman and the older fellows in the crew had worked in this crew through the war, I guess, maybe even back in the Depression or not? Or did you have a sense of the earlier years? Because you were coming in as a young man and there were other young men coming in, I guess, after the war. Did you have some veterans?
One. Well, I had one. He was a night chef, Mike Beely.
He'd fought in the war.
He fought in the war and he had back problems on a job because he's a really worker. And I don't know how many times he landed in a hospital. And he come back and he was pushing the guys. And I says, Mike. I says, how many times were you in the hospital? Have an operation in your back. He told me if I could help, what it was. How many times did you have CPR officials over here coming to visit you? None. And you're pushing the guys for them? Change your man. Change your man.
Of course, he'd been in the forces, so he'd been pushed by the officers, I guess, and he figured you needed to listen to them, eh?
I listen to them, but that's, says, don't push them like that. Says, they're doing the work. And he says, yeah, you're right.
So this is one of the places where the stew pot worked well, and the guys...
It worked for me.
Yeah, the guys were in good relations, and they'd drink together at the Legion Hall.
And that's how the work got done. That's how the work got done.
Yeah. That's a very interesting little bit of Canada here. Are there any important events that we might put on the recording? Is there anything else that... are there questions that I might have asked that I haven't asked that would you'd like to answer?
Well, I don't know. And there's a lot of joking around, but I don't want to say no jokes because the point of that is some of them won't come out very good on your end.
A certain amount of racy joking.
Plug his ears, I don't know.
Yeah, we might have to restrict this recording if you told all those stories.
Well, to your question, no, I can't recall.
No. You're satisfied with the work that you did over those years?
Oh, yes.
You served the interests of the country and the trade.
And the company.
And you're happy with the guys you worked with.
Yeah, and then he screwed me in the end, $300 chop-chop pension.
Yeah. Yeah, the companies can be nasty, yeah.
And I wasn't the only one.
According no, I dare this, say.
According to this guy, Robinson, you're not the only one.
No. No, the neighbors on the next farm, Irish background, I guess, in Manitoba. My father's impression was the old man. There were four sons who also farmed with him. But the old man had worked for one of the grain companies, and they fired him a little short of pension, so they wouldn't have to pension him off. And, so he managed to buy a farm, and they were farming the better part of 3,000 acres, or was it 2,000? Certainly much more land than was typical of farmers in the area. So they did well in those terms, but that was one of my first experiences, second-hand, third-hand, of what big companies can do. Well, it's been a pleasure interviewing you this afternoon. Appreciate what you filled in a real blank that we didn't even know existed until we were told to talk to you.
This stuff that I told you, especially with my bosses, I don't know. And if I were to listen to them, or to him, I should say, to him, the work wouldn't have gotten done the way it got done.
No. And the company probably came to realize that you were doing a good job, that you were keeping this part of the big railway operation going effectively.
Well, they did. And for him, they took the keys away from him, the company, because they let the hospital come back. So they sent the police, the CPR police, to take the keys from him because he was pilfering plywood, nails, paint. Even gas.
Oh boy.
I forgot to mention that was on the forklift too. I was loading cars in the suck shed, taking paper doors and bundles and throwing them in different cars. I was on the forklift too.
Did the paper doors couldn't be reused, I don't suppose?
Well, at first they told us to clear both doors. And then he says, if it's good on one side, leave it. Just take the other side that's down.
Yeah. The side you've opened, I guess.
Yeah, better for us.
Yeah. Less work.
Less work, yeah.
Sure. And for the company, too, if it isn't needed.
And they use less paper.
Yeah. But the paper then, it was waste. I suppose it ended up being burned with the waste.
Well, we burnt it, and there's still straps. They'd send the naked scrap with a magnet and pull it out on the truck on the way to go.
Right over the scrap yard. Right. Well, it's been a pleasure. And if And that concludes the story. Well, you've done a good job of filling in.
I've got more stories I could tell, but...
not on a recording. Well, we'll ask the engineer to shut it down, and then you can tell us another story or two while we sign the documents.
You're going to do something with those pictures?